Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Monica McNutt, kind enough to hang out with us a little bit today. And we are excited because in about 10 minutes, we get to talk to Dejounte Carrington, getting ready to watch and find out about her future as the WNBA draft is going down tonight. And this is always a cool one, Monica. Jhené and I were talking about this the other day. Obviously, Jhené has a very different experience than I did going number one overall.
Me too. Don't worry.
In that respective draft here, undrafted free agent on the other side here hanging out. But it's still such a fun night. And we've been looking at the pictures of all the young women getting ready, getting dressed up for the night tonight. Like, your life changes forever. It's a very cool culmination of working so hard for a dream for so long.
Definitely. And if you're watching this on ESPN Plus, I'm totally listening to Golic. But as you are talking, I'm just catching up with some of the fits. And for the record, Chelsea Dungy does not have on sweatpants. They are, it's a slack, but it has like a little tassel instead of a button. They tie instead of a button, but they're not sweatpants. They're just comfy pants.
And that's fine. Like, I was looking at that from a place of admiration. Like, I really admire her because it wasn't like she didn't make them look classed up. But as I said to you, Monica, I think it was during a break, I had to account for the fact that I have no style or fashion sense whatsoever. I celebrated earlier today because a pair of jorts that I ordered had just come into the mail. So
listen, jorts are worth celebrating because jorts mean that summer is upon us, sort of, kind of, or at least around the corner. I will say with Chelsea's fit, I'm pretty sure she has on some Lily May exclusive Jordan 1s, which are absolutely fire. Ooh. And she could have put on a paper bag in those shoes, and I'd have been like, okay, sis, I see you.
I was going to say, that is definitely speaking the love language of this show, because you're right. That is something I can get down with here. So plenty of fits, plenty of exciting news. Dejounte, again, fresh off one of the most controversial moments of the tournament. Former Baylor guard getting ready to hear her name called tonight. She's going to join us in about 10 minutes. But Monica, as we've talked about the draft for the WNBA tonight, as we've talked about the draft for the NFL, we had an interesting conversation with Marcus Spears about the situation surrounding Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, two of the top quarterbacks in this upcoming draft, and the way that we, as a public, digest the things they say and do differently. And we talked about Trevor coming out, his comments in an SI article about saying, you know, the game doesn't define him. He could, you know, walk away at any time and be at peace. All these different things that are around him. And yet we know would not be tolerated if Justin Fields, his counterpart, had the courage to say those things out loud. And so, Monica, I wonder if from your perspective, because I went through this process, I saw this happen for teammates of mine, for friends of mine, people in my sport, but looking at the NFL in particular, why do you think it's still such an uphill battle for black quarterbacks, especially at times, to get the kind of reception that their white counterparts do?
Golic, without diving too much into American history, there's 400 years of slavery in this country. Like, I don't say that lightly or flippantly, but we have so much work to do to erase what has been ingrained in terms of how we value, how we stereotype, what extra melanin means in somebody's decision-making process, right? And so while I'm super proud, and I'm sure you are too, of some of the conversations that we had off the heels of the murder of George Floyd and some of the conversations that were brought up again this week in the Dante Wright issue, like, this is not a, okay, we had this conversation, we're done, we good job, pat everybody on the back. Like, this is not that's not how this gets resolved simply, right? We've just got to continue to do the work. And the work is not necessarily on the onus of the people that are marginalized. In this conversation, we're talking about black people, particularly black athletes. But in any conversation in terms of establishing equity and equality, the onus can't be on the group that is marginalized to fix it. The folks that are making decisions have to diligently do their work to uncover their own biases so that at least we get to a point of, wait a minute, stop. That's not fair, right? That's an old trope. That's not fair. We need to stop and we need to address it. And I just don't think that we're there yet. And I'm not mad at it, but I think we do ourselves a disservice by thinking that we've arrived on so many levels across our society. And we've got, listen, the summer of 2020 literally just knocked on the door and was like, hey, look at all this stuff. We have not in earnest begun cleaning up our house in terms of picking up trash, taking it to the dumpster. No, all we did was open the door and people were like, oh, that does exist in America. And I don't know that we've done any work to clean it up.
No, and I think it's even a step beyond just what goes on, certainly in the decision-making. We've talked about the issues that the NFL has at top levels for, you know, black mm-hmm. executives, for black yep. head coaches. That certainly trickles down to the players. But I think it's also, and I know there's certain people that probably glaze over when this comes up because they think we're through it like this. But
yeah.
especially when you get a situation like Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, because mm-hmm. I want people to look at these two players side by side at the way we've talked about them. Because coming out of high school, Trevor Lawrence was the number one ranked player in the 2018 high school class. Justin Fields was number two. They went to three of the collectively premier institutions in college football, with Justin Fields starting at Georgia, ending up at Ohio State, and Trevor Lawrence going to Clemson. They were both two quarterbacks that met in consecutive years in the college football semifinals with their team. And honest to God, with one game and a national title in his freshman year with Trevor Lawrence, that's about what separates these two as far as career accomplishments. Justin Fields was third and seventh in Heisman voting. And Monica, looking at both of them off the field, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence were a big part of the reason we played college football last year. The We Want to Play movement, that was led by these two voices in these big ways. They both gritted through huge hits and big injuries. And so when on one side you have Trevor Lawrence coming out and saying, yes, football doesn't define me, I've got these other aspects that are important to me. And then on the other side, mm-hmm. Justin Fields just goes about his business and people start whispering about him. About him, not from him, about him,
yep.
that, oh, maybe he's not concerned with being the best or how much does he love football. That should be the clearest reminder we can see, because these guys at every step of the way have been in lockstep, and yet now when it comes to something like this, the apparent way we treat them is so different.
Well, and you know what, Golic, that gets especially murky because, similar to my experience in this industry, it's subjective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, as you and I, on surface, it looks like, oh, this, you know, just as Spears called it, it looks like there might be a race card at play here, right? In a negative way. But someone else could easily say, XYZ team that has picks up until Justin gets taken, it wasn't a fit for their organization.
Yep.
And they could legitimately justify that. And because it is subjective and it's not you or I's call, we just have to roll with it, right? But again, language is powerful. And the way that we discuss people's approach, the way that we discuss how they go about their craft, the way that we discuss them in conversations, in private rooms and conversations, like, all of that stuff is powerful. And Justin is just another black quarterback who is still kind of dealing with the shackles of a stereotype that he has not justly earned. Or doesn't deserve, rather. You don't earn that. He doesn't deserve.
No, I can say doesn't deserve in the slightest. And it goes from there, because the other thing that comes up in all this was people looking at Trevor Lawrence. They're not going to run with this, right? Like, I've always said the biggest difference between it is criticisms exist for all of these players.
For sure.
The difference with black quarterbacks is people are looking for the criticism to confirm what bias they already feel.
Mm-hmm.
But white quarterbacks, we're looking to shrug most of those away and be done with that quickly. Again, yep. it's not to bring up something that people don't know, but Mac Jones had that DUI on his record from early in his time at Alabama. And that doesn't get brought up or used against him. And I'm not saying it should either. In the same way, I'm not saying that Trevor Lawrence having outside interest should be a problem for anyone. I'm just saying that needs to be legislated evenly across the board. And we know good and damn well it's not.
100%. And I think, again, like, words have power. The stories we tell have power. Spears came on and he was tremendous today. And I'm sure that he is very proud of what he was able to come through as a young man to become an NFL player and to set his family on track, right? But at the same time, I know I personally cringe during the draft when every other story is, when it comes to black athletes, is their friend got shot, they have this tattoo in honor of their friend, their father was a drug dealer or whatever. Like, all of these stereotypical stories. And not that these are not these young men's stories and that they should not be proud of what they've been able to overcome. But even the way in which we tell these stories, the language we use in these stories, does it have a tone of pity and stereotype, or does it have more of a tone of empowerment, right? Like, is this going to be something that then defines this player moving forward? Should they have a hiccup, just as any human does, in terms of not necessarily always making the right decision? So it's so loaded. Golic, it gives me a little bit of a headache. It does need to be discussed. And I keep coming back to, words are powerful. And if we don't personally do our own diligence to check our biases and acknowledge that they exist because we are humans that came up in a society that is wrought with them, we never get past it.
We don't, and it has effects, like you've talked about. This is Justin Fields' future that we've seen in the public discourse. Now, we don't know about on the NFL side, but we've seen in the public discourse him ride the roller coaster ever since questions about his ability to read defenses started getting thrown out into the ether back, I think, even towards the end of the season. So these do, as you pointed out very accurately, have a big effect on all of this. So it's a mindful. Be mindful of all these things because they matter. Now, we are Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, but we also want you to check out some of the other great podcasts on our network. First Take, Her Take, which is hosted by our very own Chinay Igwumike, Charlie Arnold, and Kimberly Martin, discusses everything from all the things about the draft that we just talked about to, as Chinay said the other day, things and details in the personal life so intimate that people's names actually had to be omitted for their safety this podcast. That is how juicy it gets on First Take, Herd Take. New episodes drop each and every Wednesday. Make sure you check that out wherever you get your podcast. But coming up next, what's it like to play for not just one, but two of the best coaches in women's college basketball? We will ask Monica's Dog Hoops and a future WNBA star next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And it is a big night. You've seen it all over social media. You've seen it all over TV. Getting ready for the 2021 WNBA draft. And someone who is getting ready to hear her name called tonight joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Monica McNutt here. Excited to talk to Dejanay Carrington, Big 12 Sixth Person of the Year, Big 12 Newcomer of the Year, part of a great tournament run. And Dejanay, we appreciate the time today. How are you feeling heading into draft night?
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited, you know. Nervous a little, but at this point, I have nothing's in my control, so just got to enjoy the moment.
Well, doll, let me just say that you look stunning. I am feeling the eyes, the fit, the braids. You are absolutely ready for your big day. Okay, and before we get to some of the business at hand, yes, serving looks, baby, serving looks. I do have a question, though, Dejanay, because it has baffled myself all season. You got to tell me what lash glue, what edge control, what are y'all using? Because y'all are entirely too cute playing basketball. Because back in my day, baby, we was scruffy. Oh, we were so scruffy.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I don't know what the lash glue is because right now I wear individual lashes.
Okay.
But edge control, I need an edge control endorsement. Let's just throw that out there. But right now I'm using 24-hour edge control, and that's what I be using.
And it works.
I can say, and you know what? That's good. Use this platform. Let's get her a deal right now. She deserves it, and she has earned that much. Dejanay Carrington with us here. And you are at Petco Field, so walk us through this. You're a San Diego native now, and the Padres are throwing you a little draft party here. How did this come together?
Talk about a flex.
I have no idea, but it's incredible. My parents were like, do you want to have something? And I was like, I don't know. You can feel around and see, maybe we'll have something at the house. And then I get home and they're like, okay, we're having it at Petco Park. I'm like, oh, okay. So I walked in here and it's incredible. There's big heads of me everywhere. They made me a jersey, an honorary jersey.
Oh my gosh. So look at you.
I'm like, wow, I'm so blessed. So grateful. But yeah, I don't know. It's been amazing.
That's incredible, Dejanay. All right, so let's talk about the potential of tonight, and then we're probably going to run it back through a couple of college questions. We've got you in some projections. Projections, according to ESPN.com, at 11 to the Seattle Storm. Do you have any, I guess not preferences, because you're just on the precipice of starting your next chapter and a dream coming true. But if it comes to be with Seattle, or is there any particular person in the WNBA that you were hoping that you might get attached to as a teammate?
I mean, you know, going to Seattle, just being able to learn from somebody like Breanna Stewart and Sue Bird, even though I don't necessarily play the same exact positions as them, there's things from their game that anybody, any athlete would want to take, whether you play basketball or not. There's things mm-hmm. from their mindset and things like that. So that would be incredible. But, you know, I'm a California girl, so LA has always been a dream just because I'm from California. But honestly, any team, I'll be grateful and excited to get to work and change it, change their culture a little bit.
Love it.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Monica McNutt, talking to DeJounay Carrington. Again, Big 12 newcomer of the year at Baylor, part of a great tournament run there. But DeJounay, you also started your career at Stanford. You played for two of the best coaches in all of basketball in Kim Mulkey and Tara Vanderveer. So what did you learn from both of them that has you ready for what's going to come after tonight?
I learned a lot about just the mindset that you have to have. Both of those two coaches are completely different in their philosophies, but I think that that's what's going to make me different at the next level, is that I've been able to just adapt my game to very different styles of play on the offensive side and the defensive side. So I think that's something that's special about me, is that I'm very malleable to whatever situation I'm placed in, and I'm going to be able to take that to the next level.
I love that. I love that. And that's going to be a major key. All right, DeJounay, we, Golic and I have been excited to have you. I hate to kind of take you back here, but I'm going to, because it's going to make great radio. For the record, we are 100% on your team, baby girl. Don't get it twisted.
I hear it.
All right. You already know where we're going. We're going back to that semifinal matchup. And not even so much the call, DeJounay, but afterward, you were so matter of fact. Just kind of how did you process the entire thing? Because y'all were right there, and many of people were arguing that you should have had a chance to go to the line to finish that thing off.
You know, let me just start by saying I have full confidence that I would have made at least one, if not two, of those free throws. But neither here nor there.
I love that.
But, you know, I just, you know, I'm a very calm person in general, and I don't get too high or too low. I'm energetic, but I'm not a very, I don't get angry, really, like things like that. So when the call happened, I mean, everyone saw my reaction. I really was just like, wow, you didn't call that? Like, it was just for real. But I mean, everyone was like, I would have done this. I would have done that. I would have done this. I'm like, I really couldn't. I had no reaction. I was just literally just surprised, and I couldn't believe that they didn't call it. But the interview was literally 5 minutes after the game, so I really didn't have time to process it yet. But that was the first question that they asked me, of course, and I just told them my opinion of it, which in my opinion is a fact, but oh well.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, snaps all around for that one. Like you said, on this show, we are with you. We are team. That was a freaking foul in that spot, and we're going to ride with that one for good. DeJounay, we know you got plenty of stuff to get to coming up tonight, but just big picture, you were a part of getting through one of the more difficult seasons we will ever see in athletics, period, with everything around the pandemic, managing to finish it off. What did you learn about yourself, about your team, trying to go through all of this and make it to the finish line together?
It just reminded me that there's so many things that are out of your control, but at the end of the day, you just have to control what you can control. And that's what I think my team did a great job of doing. We had multiple COVID pauses. We ended up getting a 2 seed when a lot of people, including myself, thought we would have earned a 1 seed. So there's just a lot of things that are out of your control, and all we could do throughout the whole season was just control what we had control over. And that was our attitude, that was our effort, that was our energy, that was our focus, just our love for the game and our passion. So that's what we try to do the whole season, and I was proud of us, and I still am.
And well, you should be proud, DeJounay. And real quick, I know we got to get you out of here, but I'm curious, because we are all still navigating protocols in a COVID pandemic life, who all is with you at the party? Like, who's the first person that you're going to hug after you hear your name called?
Oh my gosh. Probably my parents. I don't know. My parents are here. My sister's here. My brother's not here, unfortunately, but my sister's here, my niece, and then I have some family friends here. Everyone will be masked up. But I don't know who I'm going to hug first. I think I'll just have to do a group so that no one gets their feelings hurt.
Smart veteran smart. Plays already being made before she even gets to that rookie season. Dejanay, we appreciate the time. Enjoy your time tonight. Congratulations in advance on what's going to be an awesome moment for you and everyone involved there. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Dejanay Carrington, former Baylor and Stanford stud, with us here on Chiney and Golic Jr. I'm Petco Park, too. Monica, I told you this before the show, but we as a show adopted the Padres as our show's team, so pretty jealous of the jersey that she got out of it.
Super fire. I mean, the whole, it seems like it's super sunny there. It's a good day. She's 30 minutes or so away from her life changing and reaching the next chapter on her goals, and she looks great. I love it.
I can say all around good stuff from Dejanay. But she mentioned some of the challenges from the pandemic season. We're not done with those in sports. So coming up next, are we going to have more Zoom parties in the NFL during this offseason? We'll get to it here. Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Monica McNutt. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our thanks to Dejanay Carrington for joining us. Ready? I'm so jealous, like out here having a draft party at Petco Park, got the custom jersey on deck, and because of her, I now got an education for Monica during the break on what individual eyelashes were. Monica, I was so happy I wasn't alone, because as I was sitting here and we were talking about it, our friend 2LiveUnStews tweets in and says, you guys talking about lashes and edge control is cracking me up. I don't even know what individual lashes mean, and I had to have Monica explain this to me during the break, because I just had no idea.
Let me just tell you, being a woman is such a privilege, but it also, listen, beauty just don't happen. I woke up like this is an iconic line, but it is not realistic. Thank you, Beyonce. Well, yeah, Dejanay just classed up the whole show a little bit. Golic, like, I don't know about you, but I haven't been very many places living in pandemic life. At no place that I have been have I looked that elegant, glamorous, and ready to do anything.
Well, like, we've had no reason to, Monica. Right. Like, to your point, like, I haven't been going a lot of places here, so, like, my Lulu sweatpants have been getting to work out, but I look in the closet, like, I can't even pronounce slacks anymore. I don't know what that is.
Oh, what's a waistband? I have on jeans today, actually, though, but they're really stretchy, and they're actually one of my favorite, most comfortable pairs.
You know, and I hope we all take that with us outside of the other side of the pandemic, is we can be comfortable and still be plenty good for any situation that we are in right now. But
it's male privilege, though, just so you know, because it's not entirely true as a woman. But go ahead.
Nope, I was gonna say that is 100. You and I were talking about it. There is no bigger advantage of or a bigger example of male privilege than at weddings. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in the wedding parties here, because as a guy, I'm rolling out of bed at, you know, if the wedding's at 1, we'll roll out of bed at 11, hungover from the night before, go and crack a beer and get ready and put on our tuxes, while whoever the women are in the wedding party have been up since 6 o'clock in the morning getting makeup done, Monica. Like, my eyes were so fully opened in that way where I was like, oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Yeah. But then you look super glam, and it's totally worth it. Or if you don't want the makeup, you can skip it too. Okay. Rabbit hole.
Yeah, that, I can say there's a lot we could get into on that front, Monica. And so instead, I'm going to back away slowly and just make like the real expert level and transition and say, you know, we learned a lot about how we can operate in the pandemic life. And that seems to have found its way over to the NFL, because, Monica, we've seen now more and more NFL teams and players are coming out, statements through the NFLPA saying that they are not going to participate in person in the voluntary workouts coming up this offseason. The league has come out and said that they will remain voluntary and the only thing mandatory in person are mini camps. But do you think this is going to end up being more of a wave going forward, Monica, of players not only in the NFL but around sports saying, hey, we've learned all this stuff, we can do visual now, we're not going to go and do this unnecessarily anymore?
What do you mean? You got to define going forward for me, though, Golic. What do you mean? Like this year? How long do we think this is a thing?
Well, I mean, I think this could be a thing for a while, because when you look at the NFL, Monica, I think there's a couple things in play. As one, there is still a global pandemic that we are trying to come out on the other side of. But two, you've also got a team or a bunch of teams and players that learned last year, hey, the football looked pretty good despite us having an entirely virtual offseason for us to learn in. And now they got that 17th game in there. So the players are already saying, we're giving another week of our bodies on the line for these paychecks. Why don't we take some of that time, take some of that energy off of our offseason to do this in a way that makes me think, man, they might push for this more and more to stay outside of just this upcoming season.
I guess here's my one caveat. Anytime something comes up that is supposed to be NFL players say, right? I'm always just very mindful of what NFL players are saying. literally, like, who? And so in this case, I haven't seen a ton of big names attached to it, but I remember a few years back, or I think it was what, maybe two seasons ago, maybe not a few years back, when some of the conversations were coming up about the cap and what guys were taking, and the player agreement moving forward, right? Big name guys have the cachet to wait or to not do things or can throw their weight around. And rightfully so, they've earned that. But we're talking about a league that is not, we identify with the stars, but the bulk of the league are not the stars, right? And so this to me is a small thing in terms of the totem pole of priorities, but I always immediately go to, okay, is this the stars saying this or does this represent the league as a whole in terms of some of the guys whose careers don't go past, what is it, 3.5 years, yep, or 4 years at most? And so I can't say that make or break this mentoring training camp is make or break in this conversation. But again, if I'm a fringe guy or hoping to get a 2-year deal and I'm acquiescing to the organization, do they do me some favors when it comes down to negotiating time? I do have a life and a family probably to support. So I'm not sure. I hope that the PA and the league can come together and make something clearer so that you're not putting guys in a difficult situation between, you know, standing with their brothers and their teammates versus their paychecks.
Yeah, it's a great point. As one of the guys who was a fringe guy for a long time, it's also about like the opportunities, right? You're looking for any chance you can to flash in front of coaches, whether that's at some of those workouts, whether it's passing by in the hallway. You're trying to figure out ways, I've always said, to just get to more reps.
Yep.
Like, I got to do something in these workouts so I get a few more reps in minicamp. I got to do something in this minicamp so I can get a few more reps in training camp and try and stick around this team. And whether it's taking away a preseason game, whether it's doing all virtual offseason, I'd have a lot of anxiety as a young guy not getting to go around there and do a lot of this stuff in person. It's just one of those things, Monica, unfortunately, we see, you're right, this tension between the veterans, the stars that make up the Players Association and can make the rules, and the young players who are just trying to figure it out and get by, their voices not always being the ones that are most important in that conversation.
Definitely. It's tough. I mean, I do think they'll go look, and I think as people, even though folks are getting their vaccines, we still need to be mindful. We are living in a pandemic. And so there's perhaps an asterisk on this year and next year for me. But in terms of big picture, I do expect organizations and even players to some degree to expect things to return back to the physical contact, or not necessarily contact, but the physical practices and the opportunities to bond. I think one thing that Zoom has kind of stolen away from us is some of those gems of a moments that we just have kind of kicking it and interacting with one another.
It is so true. I think we got a very big glimpse into that in a weird way during Hard Knocks last year, as we watched the Chargers and the Rams go through training camp, and some of those moments that would have translated into great on-air stuff were replaced by shots of 20 people on a Zoom screen that wasn't nearly as entertaining or endearing if you're on a team. So I'm with you. I think it's going to balance out somewhere in the middle, but I'm always on the lookout as we go through this of whether it's with the draft or the way they approach the offseason, what leagues, what teams, what players are going to take from how we operated during the pandemic and try it apply to things that come up later on, that come up in seasons where things hopefully do, like you said, get back to normal. So we'll keep an eye on that as we go forward. But coming up next, we got to ask a really important question.
This is an imperative question, Golic.
It is. People have to try and figure this out because Lord knows I can't. What the hell can't Chinne Igumike do?
We love it.
We're going to figure it out next here, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chinne and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Monica McNutt, been kind enough to hang out with us all day here. You can catch her hosting MSGPM on Madison Square Garden Network. You can catch her on Around the Horn all the time around here. The ACC Network holding it down. We also had some great guests today. Ryan Hollins, 10-year NBA vet, joined us talking about the MVP race. Marcus Spears, our uncle and ESPN NFL analyst, kind enough to stop by as we talk about Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, some of the things being said there. He quite literally took us to church there. Check that one out.
Indeed.
In the podcast. And Dejanay Carrington, WNBA hopeful, Big 12 newcomer of the year and sixth person of the year, Baylor guard, getting ready to hear her name called in the WNBA draft. You miss any of it, check it out on the podcast wherever you get your podcast. But Monica, we appreciate you hanging out with us today because Chinne was out here, and we always joke and say Chinne's out conquering the world. But Monica, I'm really starting to wonder, like, what there is she can't do, because as we continue, like you and I were just sitting here during the break, and all of a sudden I look up and I see her on a dang DoorDash commercial.
There's her face. There she is. Then I'm on Twitter and Elle Duncan has this great retweet about all of her multiple jobs and the drop today that I believe you're about to get to.
Yes, a big drop today. So we want to celebrate the accomplishments of our good friend. We want to support that energy. We want to keep that energy. Let's do it. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
Because for everyone listening on ESPN Radio and watching on ESPN Plus, you now get to see the first preview for ESPN Films' first WNBA documentary entitled 144, executive produced by our very own Shanae Agwumike, documenting life in the WNBA bubble, what these women accomplished. Here is our first look at the documentary.
The WNBA is on its way back.
While I'm planting the seeds that our ancestors...
Playing basketball in a pandemic looks like this. No mask. No 6 feet apart. To put yourself in harm's way is a scary decision.
This is the hardest championship anybody will ever win. The bubble.
Mommy!
The state of the world.
This is where our nation is 3 months after George Floyd's death.
I can't help the way God made me. And there's
if we were going to play, we wanted to take our stand on what we believe in.
We are dedicating this season to Breonna Taylor. We will be a voice for the voiceless.
'Cause enough is enough.
The unity that we were able to experience as players was something that we won't forget and we can lean on as we move forward.
Is there a way 144 of us can gather and actually make a statement?
I would do it all over again, because it's bigger than me. It's bigger than my teammates.
May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can check that out. Monica, it's so wild watching that back, because I remember when Chiney was with us on the show, she did not go to the WNBA bubble this year, seeing her on the phone with her sister NECA, coordinating a lot of what we saw there as a response to the shooting of Jacob Blake, and just the work I saw her putting into that in real time, now getting shown to the world.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a snippet, and I found myself getting a little bit emotional, honestly, Golic. What a summer that was. And to look at it through the lens of WNBA players who have always, and I think most smart folks in the media have gotten this right, but have always been at the front of the intersection of social issues and using their sports platform to see the inside out of that is going to be incredible. So definitely tip of the cap to our girl Shanae and getting that done. But what a summer that was. And I think to see De'Erica Hamby's daughter, Amaya, in there, just... what example are we setting for the youth, right? Like, and I don't mean to go super deep as we wind this thing down, but I was just really struck by Amaya in the midst of all of these powerful women speaking up on behalf of issues in our nation that they did not inherently create themselves. But man, wow, so much to think about and chew on there.
There really is. Like you said, it shouldn't be the job of people that are suffering at the hands of institutional forces to make the change, but we see so many people, and like you mentioned, the WNBA especially, so many women, black women, stepping up for that cause to make that happen. It is incredibly powerful. So again, 144, the documentary executive produced by our very own Shanae Agwumike with ESPN Films, something everyone needs to check out. Janae Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, and keeping that same energy, had a big announcement in the world of college football, and this courtesy of Nicole Arbach at The Athletic. The National Coalition of Minority Football Coaches has announced the creation of a Coalition Academy, a first-of-its-kind mentorship program pairing influential athletic directors with minority football coaches. And Monica, we've talked so much about decision-makers in the room not necessarily looking like or representing minority voices. This is one of the efforts we're starting to see to try and bridge that gap, to try and get minority coaches into these circles and get them into the jobs and positions they've earned.
Nicole Auerbach does tremendous work, have followed her work for a long time. And while this is incredible and I'm celebrating this, I also am already ready to clap back at the affirmative action hire crew. Don't start. Nope. We need things like this, because on our own, clearly, we still can't get right. And so this is hopefully one more step to actualizing, not just talking about it, not black squares, not your videos, blah, blah, blah. Put this thing into action. I want to see more minority and black coaches on the sideline coaching the players that happen to look a large percentage just like them.
I couldn't agree more, Monica. It's a small step, but it's a start. It's where we've got to get going to your point. But before we let you go, Monica.
Oh, God. I'm coming back tomorrow, by the way.
I know. We're excited to have you back tomorrow. But you know what? Looking at some of the names that have been floated today, Mike Callow, who works at ESPN 630 in D.C., floated out some potential names for the Washington football team. The Aces, the First City Football Club, the Archers, the Beacons, the Belters, the Red Tails, Razorbacks, Defenders, and the football team. Monica, how you feeling right now?
I feel like you are adding to the hazing of me and my rookie tour during the week on ESPN Radio. I hate this. Leave it as Washington Football Club. Let's go.
Couldn't agree more. I think this is a stay woke, everyone. They're putting these names out there in the ether to make you realize the football team is the best choice. Monica's going to be back with us tomorrow here. Spain and Fitz are up next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.